Hello, and welcome to On Sacred Ground on the LMC Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting the voices of the land and of the dead by weaving together history, ethnography, and spiritual experience. I'm your host, Kai Armand, and if you're tuning in online on Blog Talk Radio and finding yourself having some technical issues, remember that you can listen to the show by calling in via your phone or Skype to 657-383-0525. That's 657-383-0525. And to those of you who are listening live and are in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com, welcome and thanks so much for tuning in. This is our fourth episode of On Sacred Ground, broadcasting live at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific on this January 10th, 2015. This episode is a call-in show in which we'll be discussing house spirits and land spirits. So if you have any questions, comments, or would like to share some of your stories or ideas about working with house spirits or land spirits or some of your own life experiences, please give us a call again at 657-383-0525 and be sure to let me know that you're on the line. We begin today's episode with a reading from the Hindu scriptures, the Atharva Veda 19, dating back to between the 15th and 10th centuries before the Common Era, which reads, "From that which we fear, make us fearless. O bounteous one, assist us with your aid. May the atmosphere we breathe, breathe fearlessness into us. Fearlessness on earth and fearlessness in heaven. May fearlessness surround us, above and below. May we be without fear, by night and by day. Let all the world be my friend." Unquote. You know, few conditions in the realm of spirit work make relevant the need to make all the world our friend than issues of house spirits and land spirits. Cultures across the world have recognized the connection between the land and the living and devised over thousands of years technologies for mediating this relationship in the realm of human dwellings and homes is made all the more evident. Because it really is in our homes and edifices, these places that we create to house ourselves and house our businesses, that the intersection between the land and the humans in the modern age is really brought to the forefront, as we intend for these spaces to really assert our dominance and our sovereignty in relation to, you know, the elements that be. So when we discover that this isn't entirely the case, that, you know, the sovereignty that we're trying to assert, the idea of sheltering ourselves from the outside forces, that, you know, the plaster, the plywood, it's not doing everything we're thinking it's doing in terms of sort of protecting ourselves from the outside world, protecting ourselves from having to interact with these forces, that we're not almighty in relationship to our surroundings, it can be quite the discovery. From suites left for the fae folk in the British Isles, to outdoor spirit houses built in Thailand to appease spirits of the land that have been displaced during construction of a human dwelling, we're exploring some of the ways humanity has tended this relationship, the consequences that have arisen when we have not, and how those of us living in Western cultures can do so, how we can begin to tend these relationships if we have not been, for the well-being of ourselves and of our environments.
It goes a one and a two and a three and it goes like this. Crying, the elders are dying, and me, I'm government spend it, especially when the government's got a plan of their own. Separate from me, separate from you, separate from most, in sync with a few. Aching for acres, plenty of acres. My grandpa had them all, but he lost them and he sold them. Cities I were growing, grandpa's getting old, and little did he know that his land was valuable. But got land to stand on, then you can stand up. Stand up for your rights as a woman, as a man. Man, oh man, my choice is expand. Ain't got me no money, but I got me some
got
land.
Got some land to stand on, no more aching for the acres. No begging for leftovers. Got some space of my own. Got some ground to raise on. No more aching for the acres. No more giving to the takers. Got some land to leave on. Yeah.
Welcome back to On Sacred Ground. I'm your host, Kai Armand, and today we are speaking about house spirits, land spirits, and their impact on our human experience and day-to-day relations. In the modern industrialized world, we've been conditioned to see the concept of house spirits and land spirits as, well, superstitious nonsense that somehow evolved in, somehow survived in the quote-unquote evolution of traditional cultures through more recently surviving folk traditions, and now is sort of just a waste of cookies and milk, you know, hearkening back to an offering some folks in the British Isles make or, you know, have made to appease what they call the fae folk or land spirits that might be sharing their dwelling with them. Even amongst seasoned spiritual practitioners who are used to remediating spiritual issues, the concept of house spirits might not be familiar to them, and it might be something that is really entirely overlooked. Mistaking a house spirit or land spirit issue for something else, requiring a house cleansing or an exorcism or a feng shui type of remediation or anything else but what it is. So, what is a land spirit? A land spirit, here's the definition that I'm working with right now, and I'm sure this will evolve over time, but right now, a land spirit is an entity that is the energetic representation of the land itself. They might be gigantic, covering great swaths of land, whole continents even, or they might be very local, pertaining to a singular region or area. There may be a spirit of a mountain or a river. It may also be even more local than that, say, the spirit of a rock that you kick out of your path. When we talk about spirits of the land, we're talking about animism, the sentience of all things. So we're also talking about the possibility of an endless ecology. When working with spirits of the land in our meditations and our journeys and for making offerings and receive a vision of what we're doing, you know, they may appear as varied as can be imagined. They might seem humanoid. They might look dwarvish. They might look elvish. You know, this is sort of speaking to some how such entities, how such characters have sort of shown up in our mythologies. Oftentimes, you know, we're talking about dwarves or elves in our stories, you know, consider Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, and they're tied to certain places of the land in these stories, and it's hearkening back, obviously, to European mythology and European traditions about who's governing what. How do we see these land spirits and our interactions with them? So they may appear as humanoid, as dwarvish, as elvish, or they might seem really gigantic and like something out of one of our cartoons. I know that when I've worked with really big land spirits, by land spirits in this context, I'm talking about regional land spirits. They've looked sometimes like mountains. They've looked really, really huge versus something, you know, sort of smaller and not more manageable, but something that you can imagine moving through a house and either bringing blessings or causing disruption. But either way, you know, when we're talking about land spirits, we're not necessarily talking about energies that are friendly. In fact, I can only think of possibly one time in which I interacted with a land spirit where that first initial interaction was friendly. And we can imagine why this is the case, considering where we are in terms of human relationships with the land, what we've been doing with the land, how we've been interacting with, how we even see the land. You know, we're not even living in a time where we see the land as sentient or in need of our care. And it's wonderful that we are making these efforts with environmental nonprofits, etc. But you know, it's a lot little too late. So we're not necessarily talking about friendly energies when we first approach them, but they don't need to be friendly. They owe us nothing. We owe them so much. We are deeply indebted to these beings in our forgetting. Not only to leave them milk and cookies, but because of not only, you know, not just forgetting to leave the milk and cookies because of folk rights, but because we're drilling and we are putting up, you know, new buildings and doing all this construction without their permission. Because bonds were made between these beings and humanity, and they were forged, and then these bonds were forgotten. And also because we've massacred the folks who did know how to maintain good relationships with the land. So for a huge amount of us, for those of us who are not living in traditional cultures, for those of us who don't even have traditional cultures to turn to ask, how do we do this? We're really starting from scratch in terms of what to do here. Land spirits, they may also be guardians. They might not be the energetic representation of the land itself, but land spirits are also guardians of a particular area of land or stewards. These aren't, again, energetic representations of the land itself, but they are spirits that are literally protecting a space, like a forest or a pool of water. And it might be that you have to work with that guardian of that area of land before you actually have land access to the land itself. Spiritually. Or it might be that if you enact some kind of faux pas or pollute that area of land, that guardian there might be some repercussions because that guardian is particularly focusing on this piece of land in terms of protection way. And to make things a little bit more interesting and a little bit more complex, land spirits may also be ancestors. And I don't just mean ancestors in the way that, you know, the earth, the air, the fire, the water, these are all our ancestors, which is true, you know, when we're looking at our evolution from stardust. But I mean literally our ancestors. Because there have been humans who, in their death, because of their relationship to an area of land, or because of their cosmology, when they die, they have chosen to join with that land and become a part of that land spirit entity. In my own experience, this has really huge ramifications for us, the living, in the modern industrialized world, because if we are those individuals who do have ancestors who, in their death, became a part of an area of land, then we are not only talking about our ancestors, we're talking about literally places on earth that we are tied to very very specifically. And in our own healing, these energies, these land spirit energies, might show up, might actually step up and lend a hand in that work. And this is, you know, leaving out the conversation of past lives and past lives where we might have been a person living in a traditional culture who had a very strong relationship with the spirit of land. That's another conversation altogether, but it definitely does resonate with this conversation, ways in which we are connected to land and how that those spirits of the land might show up as we move through our lives today. Now, I think that this might be relatively rare, that a land spirit might show up in this sort of healing modality, but it does happen. and when it's appropriate. Pretty mind-blowing when it does. To give you an example, I was doing some work with a woman who was working through some difficult anxiety issues in her life. And when I entered the healing with my helping spirits, I was shown some ancestral concerns in which someone in her ancestral line really chose not to be in integrity. Chose not to be in integrity in her relationship with a man, and not to be in integrity with her family, and telling them about this relationship with this man, and some choices that she could have made that would have resulted in obviously difficult circumstances for her, but would have been a beautiful push in the direction specifically of racial harmony in this family. She chose not to make those decisions. And because of that, a pattern of being out of integrity was being passed through her descendants. And this being out of integrity was not just showing up in this sort of mental anxiety, but was also showing up in terms of health issues. And integrity wasn't the first word that was coming to mind when I was doing this work. It seemed to be about truth-telling. It seemed to be about telling one's truth, being in one's own self, making those hard decisions. But when the situation was resolved and this ancestor moved on, and my spirits were saying, okay, well, now there's work for this client to resolve in their own lives, and this work, and then that word integrity showed up. And I was asking, well, what does this client need to do in order to invite the energy of integrity into her life to replace those ancestral energies that now had been sort of ripped out of the line? And what I instantly knew, which I had never experienced anything like this before, but what I instantly knew was that this woman who I was doing this work for, that her ancestors, certain ancestors of hers, had done rituals in the Caucasus Mountains for millennia. And because of that, because of this relationship that her ancestors, or a certain portion of her ancestors, had with the Caucasus Mountains, the energy of mountain itself, the archetypal energy of mountain, was stepping forward to be a helping spirit for her to step into integrity, to help clear the remnants of that ancestral energy in her own life. And it was just, you know, moments like this when you're doing a healing work or meditative work are just really beautiful and mind-blowing and just assert that connection that we have that in our everyday lives we are so often forgetting. And it's just something that I will never forget, this moment of knowing, oh my God, you have a relationship, you have stock, you know, your ancestors created stock in this relationship that now, thousands of years later, benefits you so much, and you can begin working now with the archetypal energy of mountain because of this relationship that your ancestors had with this piece of land, to cross this line now in terms of your own self-healing. So that's just sort of one example. I'm going to be sharing a lot more examples of my work with, rather than just sort of giving a brief bulleted rundown of why should we work with land spirits, because they bring us money, because they make us happy, you know, I think that the proof is really in the pudding. So I'm definitely looking forward to sharing sort of more stories of what this relationship means, since it's not just a one-off trade. It's deeper than that. It's much deeper. So I think what's really important for us to start with right now is the fact that these are spirits that do exist. And when we're having an issue with them, exorcism, you know, in our own homes, exorcism is not the answer. So if you are someone who is very interested in remediating spiritual issues, house cleansing, etc., begin to learn to identify when land spirits and house spirits are the issue in at hand. There's an interesting article that came out in the New York Times in January of last year, January 17th, 2014, Sunday Review. And this article was called Workers of the World Faint, and it's by Julia Wallace. And I'm just going to read a few excerpts from it. In the past few years, Cambodia has experienced a slew of mass faintings among garment workers. One after the other, hundreds of women have fallen to the floor of their factories in a dizzy spell called Duol Son Lap in the Khmer language. Now, I might have just butchered that word, but I tried my best. The swooning has been attributed variously to heat, anemia, overwork, underventilation, chemical fumes, and food poisoning. But according to one group of medical anthropologists and psychologists who have studied the phenomenon, two-thirds of these episodes are associated with accounts of possession by local guardian spirits known as Nik Ta. Going on a bit further in the article, it reads, although Theravada Buddhism has been the official religion of Cambodia since the 13th century, it never supplanted the existing pantheon of ancestral spirits, local gods, and Brahmanic deities. Perhaps the most important of these is the Nik Ta, a spirit strongly associated with a specific natural feature, a rock, a tree, a patch of soil. These spirits represent a village-based morality and are inseparable from the land. This connection is so strong that in past times, even some kings were seen to merely be renting the land from Nik Ta. These days, when Nik Ta appear on the factory floor, inducing mass faintings among workers and shouting commands at managers, they are helping the cause of Cambodia's largely young, female, and rural factory workforce by registering a kind of bodily rejection to the harsh daily regimen of industrial capitalism. Few days off, a hard bed in a wooden barracks, meager meals of rice and mystery curry, hastily scarfed down between shifts, these voices from beyond are speaking up for collective bargaining in the here and now, expressing grievances much like the workers' own, a feeling that they are being exploited by forces beyond their control, that the terms of factory labor somehow violate an older, fairer moral economy. And this article ends with a particular sentence just talking about how last year, so I guess in 2013, in a particular slum, there was a demonstration by residents who were being evicted by a wealthy landlord, and this demonstration was interrupted when a Nik Ta possessed an indigent woman who lived under a staircase with her mentally ill husband, and both of them were suffering from HIV. The woman assaulted a local official who was trying to shut down the protest, forcing him to stand down. Previously, the landlord had cut down an old banyan tree, believed to be the Nik Ta's home. "I have been protecting this area for a long time," the woman shouted, "and I am very angry because the company demolished my house. I am very, very angry." This is such a unique article, and if you get a chance, it's much longer than what I've read. Definitely look it up. It's from New York Times, January 17th, 2014, Workers the World Faint. And I love this article because it is one of the few things, I guess, to show up in mainstream media that is about this intersection between not just land spirits and people, but, you know, we have possession going on. And it's obviously something that is thwarting capitalistic efforts. You know, there's a lot of money being made, a lot of exploitation at hand here. And to be honest with you, the article is also a little bit painful because, as you can surmise from the title, it's not saying workers of the world, workers of the world create some camaraderie with local land spirits. It's saying, ha, these very interesting, you know, sort of collective animal psychology, indigenous people are finding a way in their sort of collective animal psychology to thwart capitalistic efforts that are exploiting them, and they have this sort of mythology, you know, to back them up in doing so, because these Niktar are possessing these women especially and demanding from their managers, you know, I will continue possessing your workers and halting your workday until you provide weekends off, until I get a feast every 6 months where you feed all of these workers, etc. And of course, us in our Western mind, not realizing how wrong we are, A, in terms of just believing that this is a great ploy, and B, racist. It's also very racist of us to believe that somehow in some subliminal way these people, you know, these indigenous people and people of color are just sort of telepathically, we should all faint to get out of this. So there are these strong problematics, but it's, if we're looking at it through the eyes of animism, then what we're reading is true. It's what the people are saying. And I'm always a big believer in, when in doubt, believe people of color. I mean, really, we should believe everyone, but often it is people of color and people of color's experiences, especially when they are at odds with dominant narratives about truth, we should shut up and believe them when they're saying, I'm experiencing this thing, this Nikta is possessing me, and that's what is really happening here. I might be getting some benefit out of this, maybe I'll have an extra day off, but really this is about a traditional entity that's from this land that's showing up and saying, you're not done with, just because you've erected this factory on top of me, just because you cut down the bondman tree where I lived, you're not done with me, and I'm going to show you I'm not done with you. One of my early experiences with land spirits, it's a pretty easy topic to ignore until you're faced with it head on. And I've definitely been put through some training grounds regarding this type of energy, was when I was an intern on a beautiful tract of land in Pennsylvania. The place was, and still exists today, Four Quarters Farm. And I was a summer intern there at this earth sanctuary. So this land was tended really well. Beautiful festivals were happening on this land every weekend, people coming out and celebrating earth-based traditions, and I was camping there. And I wasn't camping there at first. At first, I was staying in one of the bunk rooms in a building, but after a couple of weeks, it was time for me to move out to the campground, which was pretty much just well-tended forest. And after a few days of camping there, there was a bee that did not like me, and it really had it out for me, and it was huge, and I could not understand what was going on, and I did not feel safe in that area where my tent was. Now, I had not polluted the area. I was really just working all day, so I couldn't figure out why this bee had it out for me. And it really became a bit of an issue when I wanted to go and rest after a long day's work. So it came to mind that I had a beautiful rite written in my book of shadows, as it were, my little spell book. And it was by Scott Cunningham from one of his books. And it was called A Rite for the Earth. And basically, it was a healing visualization. It was a, you know, you place your hands on the earth and you say this prayer and you pour the energy of healing and well-being into the earth to create a strong connection and just sort of an energy of goodwill. And it came to mind, maybe this is something I should do at where my tent is. And I did. I did it to the best of my ability. I was very much a novice spirit worker at the time. And the bee never bothered me again. Ever. So that was one of my experiences, and one of my first experiences. And for anyone who practices any kind of animist or earth-based spirituality, I'm sure you know that it's usually those sort of formational experiences that you build up over time that you remember. It begins to you begin to create stronger faith in yourself and not just your abilities, but belief in your experiences. And that was an early foundational one for me. So we've been talking a lot about land spirits, but what about house spirits? Because obviously this is also a show about house spirits. And I'm not talking about dead people who some people might call or consider, you know, friendly ghosts or friendly dead who just hangs around, you know, oh, you know, Sally, she walks through the room and smiles and who knows why she's here, but, you know, she's not that big of an issue. I'm talking about house spirits, which are an entirely different construct altogether. Now, a house spirit might be a land spirit, but in my experience, a house spirit is the energetic representation of a structure that we have built, or of an object in that structure. But it is tied to a human-made space. And on one hand, it can affect the space tremendously, the interactions in the space, etc. On the other hand, it might set the entire tone of the space, depending on what kind of house spirit it is. So an example of this is that some time ago, I was living in a different area of Brooklyn. I had moved into a space that was already set up, and I had very cool, chill guy roommates. It was spacious and cozy, maybe a bit too cozy, a bit too crowded perhaps. But these weren't things I was noticing. I needed a space to live as I was going through some life transitions at the time. And being a spirit worker and knowing what I know, I was able, you know, I definitely did a very good strong cleansing of the space, including my own portion of the space, my own rooms. I was good at putting up wards and protection for myself. And to be honest with you, there were a lot of dead people, a lot of ghosts in this building, which were an ongoing conversation throughout the time I was living there. And I had sort of found a way of, I would say, directing them, sort of directing them past my space until they could be sort of gotten rid of in an en masse way. So despite me doing everything that I knew, something was still off. When I would journey, I was still being shown that there was an area of the space that I needed to protect myself from, that there was something wrong in this space and that was thwarting my well-being. And my well-being was most certainly being thwarted in a number of ways. So it took some time for me to figure it out, and I actually needed some help, someone else with eyes that were not my own, someone, a third party who was not living with me, who was an excellent spirit worker friend of mine, to come and sit with me. And I just sort of said to this person, I said, there's something going on here, and I don't know what it is. And I think it's tied to this particular roommate of mine, one of the three that I was living with. And we sort of just entered a bit of sort of a light trance together and started bouncing information off of each other. And what it turned out was that there was a house spirit that through our mind's eye looked like a shaggy man who really wanted to keep to himself. He really did not like people. And he was not tied to the apartment as an originating force. He was absolutely tied to an object that this roommate of mine had brought from their own family's home with them, and having now lived in this apartment for many years, it sort of had taken up residence in the living room. And it was very, very standoffish. Really didn't like to speak with anyone. I put out a cup of tea for it. It may be willing to share some information with me, but very resistant to change, etc. So the next couple of days, I started to think about the social interactions that took place in the space and how much those social interactions, when I had friends over, when this roommate of mine had friends over, how he felt about the space in general, my ability to work and sleep there, how much they all resonated with this very strong standoff energy that this house spirit had, and how no one could really stay in the space very long or very late. And really, this particular roommate, his ability to dominate the space with his own, I would say, standoffishness was quite strong. But I needed to figure out a way of dealing with this so that I could live well in that space for as long as I was going to do so. So it took about a whole day of multiple journeys with my helping spirits to this house spirit to understand the different components that it was constructed out of. And what this house spirit was constructed out of was this house spirit was made up of this roommate of mine's family traumas. And I don't mean traumas in the sense of there was a fire or there was an accident. I mean those things that we don't consider to be traumas, but they are, because they're unresolved emotional energies that we simply don't know what to deal with. And during this time, my roommate was actually abroad for a few months, and I was learning so much about his family simply by talking to this helping spirit, talking to this house spirit, and asking my helping spirits to show me the energetic background of this spirit and resolving those energies in shamanic journey. And I learned that this housemate of mine, for instance, that their mother was struggling with some mental illness, that there had been some lack of integrity on the father's part in terms of coming to grips with their own sexuality and how this had manifested in various aspects of family life, et cetera. And as we were healing components of this house spirit, the house spirit began to change. It began to change dramatically. And after a day or two of doing this work, the space felt completely different. And what had been a shaggy, standoffish man who wanted tea and to be alone turned into something that looked very much like sort of Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat. And the entire space became so much more friendly feeling and exciting and joyful and free. And when this roommate of mine came home, not only was I able to say, hey, you know, I did some things here. I did some things here to make the space, you know, make them feel a bit better. And he had been, you know, someone who identified as holistic since the beginning of our interaction, so it didn't really seem like an issue. But this isn't something that he expected. And he actually had to rearrange the space dramatically to sort of find a way to settle back in, because he had been used to living in that energy that he had brought from his family's home for so long. So that was a very unique experience of mine. And it did not actually finish resolving everything, because in another journey of mine during that time, my helping spirits, I work with the energy of Crow, and I was asking my helping spirits why something was not working in terms of my endeavors in the space. And Crow, in this journey of mine, dropped a corn kernel onto the ground. And I had been shown this a number of times, and it finally hit me, oh, I need to make offerings. And I went to the supermarket around the corner and bought a bunch of corn for $1.29. And I knew that I was going to look like a crazy person, but it's okay. I really don't have any qualms about that. I rather enjoy it. And I walked around my block sprinkling corn, and there were some, I guess, hot spots around my block in this area of Brooklyn that seemed particularly thirsty. And I did this with a tremendous amount of apologizing on behalf of my people, humans, saying that I know that no one had probably done this or cared in a really long time. And I was saying, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry for that. As I sprinkled corn around this block of mine where I lived. At a certain point, it seemed like, okay, that was enough. And I went inside my house. In about 5 minutes, I experienced a tremendous nausea, as it felt like I was 6 feet underground. The simple act of me having done this where I lived caused such a tremendous response from the land spirits, who shot up through the edifice of my building. And that alone actually resolved the ghost issue I had been experiencing before. And it was a clue to me that when we talk about the land isn't really just an energy beneath our feet, but when tended well, it's actually an energy that goes above our, above what we call the land itself. It's a supporting energy for our lives that we at this time have just been really energetically depleting tremendously. But it's more than just, this is land beneath my feet, hi, thanks, I walk on you. We're talking about an energy that, as far as I've experienced, is really supposed to sort of pour upwards through our edifices and provide an energetic structure to the spaces that we live in. So that, say, ghosts ad nauseam, negative energies, etc., are not so easily attracted to this empty space, to this space that has no structure, no sound, no foundational energies moving through it. So that being said, I know we don't have much time left in this episode. I'm not going to be able to cover everything I want to, but that being said alone, I hope that that is some encouragement. Go make offerings to land spirits where you live. It can be a very simple act. It can be a very simple act, and it's something that I strongly encourage.
You are listening to another fine production of the LMC Radio Network, whose art and information may be found on its webcast shows. The LMC Radio Network is a community radio alliance of metaphysical, spiritual, inspirational, and poetical justice broadcasters spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie. It features panel discussions on traditional African-American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. This is the longest-running Conjure show on radio and may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner, starring Candelo Cambisa and Ancestor Healing. This is the voice of authentic Cuban Palo and Dominican Sanse in the United States, welcoming special guests representing the entire range of African traditional and diasporic traditional religions. You can hear Candela's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. On Tuesdays, a pair of outstanding hosts point the way to essential values. First, on the Crystal Silence League Hour, John St. Germain provides spiritual guidance in the practical use of crystals and crystal balls for the development of mental concentration, mind power, divination, and telepathic communication. His show airs Tuesday evenings from 5 to 6 o'clock Pacific Time. Once you have your bearings, engage in activism and social justice in the streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly brings listeners front-page reports on the ongoing struggle for racial, gender, and social justice, shedding much light on civil and social rights issues. Her cry for freedom begins at 6 p.m. Pacific Time and inspires us for 1 hour. On Wednesdays, Andrea Weston's Liquid Libations pour forth to bless us with poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances. If you are a poet or someone who simply enjoys the beauty and power of words, then Liquid Libations welcomes your participation. Call in and read your work. Listen for Liquid Libations on Wednesdays from 5 to 6:30 Pacific Time. And on Thursdays, from deep in the heart of Texas, where the stars at night are big and bright, there to school you so no one can fool you, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the silver-tongued professor shares his knowledge of roots and delivers the lucky numbers. From 6 to 7:30 Pacific Time, there's no end to the surprises. All the shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in beautiful Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern. Tax and license may apply. Train departure times and Burma Shave signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
Lucky Mojo Curio Company is based in Sunny Forestville, California, and provides traditional spiritual products for remediating all kinds of conditions. Locate them online at luckymojo.com or visit them in person to see the world's smallest church, Missionary Independent Spiritual Church. So, welcome back to On Sacred Ground. I'm your host, Kai Armand, and we don't have much time left in this episode, but I wanted to end this episode with a bit of a conversation about, well, what do we do about house spirits and land spirits? And right before, in our last segment, I was ending that by saying, making some offerings of corn, of tobacco, of pouring perhaps water, or and as a form of libations, or even leaving a bit of food. These are all ways of making offerings to the spirits in our local region. And it literally is as simple as going outside and doing it. Doing it on your own land, on your own property, doing it at a crossroads, for instance, that is a place of power that some people feel very strongly connected to in their areas, or doing this in the wild. But simply doing it not from a place of, now I would like to have something from you, now you would like to, now you must give me something, not even doing it from a place of, and now I'm in really good relationship with these energies, because you're not. It's not a cookie for hundreds of years of misuse is simply not going to work. But begin to tend these relationships, we can begin to move into alliance with these spirits, these land spirits that are the energies of the mountains, rivers, city blocks that we live in and among and within close proximity to. We can begin to make those offerings every few weeks, every month, and just saying, I'm looking forward to being in good relationship with you. And seeing how that begins to change our world, our personal lives. For instance, we might find when speaking with a helping spirit in our own lives, well, you've been doing this work for a few months and now you have this ally or someone who's willing to engage with you to help you with this problem in your community or to help you with this problem in your life. Some prosperity issues as well as issues of peace and exorcism issues. Some of these are most easily solved by going to the land upon which your dwelling sits and making offerings. And if you had any practice of meditation or talking with your helping spirits for advice, you can go to them and ask, what does it best serve me to do regarding spirits of the land where I live? How can I be in good relationship with them? Please show me where to start. When it comes to house spirits, now, not every house spirit, again, is in an energetic state that really serves us. Sometimes, as I mentioned before in the last segment, sometimes really deep emotional clearing or some kind of energetic revolution is necessary to bring health and well-being to a house spirit that someone is living with. It's not, I would say, probably especially in our age, just about leaving offerings, but resolving those things that haven't been resolved because, well, we haven't been doing this for a really long time. So, again, you can turn to your helping spirits. You can turn to the spirits that you already know and work with and ask them for help. But you can also, say, provide flowers. Provide those cookies and milk. Provide those libations. As you begin to work toward understanding what is the energy of my home, who's here? Who's here and what do they need? I'm a big believer in people believing themselves. So if you feel like you are ready to enter into meditation or shamanic journey and ask your helping spirits, show me the energies of my home. Show me the house spirits that are in my home or perhaps the ones next door who might be affecting your home. Absolutely do so. And you might not necessarily be well-versed resolving energetic issues, but you might be able to ask, well, what is one action I can take toward bringing this energy into greater integrity, to bringing myself into greater, a better relationship with this energy for the well-being of myself and that energy. Again, I love that poem that the show began with, making all the world our friend. This is, I feel like this is no more evident, as evidently necessary, than in this topic right now, as we move forward. If we want to experience a different world, then we need to focus especially on these relationships that have not been tended, these land spirit energies, and how they intersect with our own dwellings and our own bodies, so that we can move forward in a good way. This has been another episode of On Sacred Ground with your host, Kai Armand. Tune in next week as we continue to go deep into the heart of the human experience, in which place plays a primary role. Until then, keep a light in your window for courage in our times. I'll be keeping a light in mine. God bless.